In kindergarten, I had two police officers come to my kindergarten class. And as a little kid, 5 years old, I thought it was the coolest thing in the whole world.
That's Oakland Police Officer C. Del Rosario in a recruitment video posted on the OPD website. It features a diverse group of officers talking about what made them want to be part of the force. At the end, Chief Howard Jordan comes on.
Hello, my name is Chief Howard Jordan from the Oakland Police Department. I want to take this opportunity to welcome you and ask you to join the Oakland Police Department. We are one of the best departments in the country. We're a very professional organization. We are very diverse, and I want to ask you, especially if you're from Oakland.
Did you hear that? Especially if you're from Oakland. But of the more than 2,000 people who ended up applying for the 55 new positions on the force, most were from outside of the city. In fact, more than 90% of the current police force doesn't live in Oakland, something that activists say strains community police relations. We'll hear more about that and why the department struggles to recruit from within the city a bit later in the program. But there's another element to this discussion that's worth exploring first, and that's the effect it has on city resources. Oakland spends about 40% of its general fund on police. That compares with 26% spent on police in San Jose, 17% in Sacramento, and 7% in Long Beach. Oakland's police expenditures are the focus of this week's East Bay Express cover article, which says Oakland could be losing nearly $200 million a year in revenue because the money goes to officers who live elsewhere and consequently don't spend much in the city. I'm joined now by Ali Winston and Darwin Bond Graham, who reported this story. So the big criticism of a police force that doesn't live near the people it seems it serves is that there's no connection between residents and officers, or that seemed to be the gist of your article.
Yes, and it's a two-part problem. One part is that if the officers aren't from Oakland and they don't live in Oakland, then when they come in to do their job, a lot of residents feel that they're coming in as sort of a occupying force. That's one of the phrases that we've heard, and that the community police relations are strained as a result of that. The second part of the problem is economic. If none of the officers live here, that means that a lot of money in the form of salaries and benefits is flowing out to suburban communities where officers live, where they own homes, have mortgages, and do most of their shopping.
So explain that, the money flowing out. You say that the police department is in the center of Oakland's fiscal woes, consuming 40% of the city's general fund a year, and that money for civil lawsuits is also a huge cost to the city and a symptom of some of the community relation problems. Go ahead and explain that.
It's a lot of money. Policing is the single biggest thing that Oakland spends money on. That's not unusual. A lot of cities spend the largest single portion of a lot of cities' budgets is policing. In Oakland, it's 40%. That is way above and beyond what most any other city spend on policing. Other comparable cities like Fresno and Sacramento and Long Beach spend a lot less on policing. So the police department is a very expensive and costly agency within Oakland's government. It basically, a lot of money is flowing out of Oakland because of the officers who don't live here. But if you combine the fact that there is this antagonism between the Oakland Police Department and the communities that they're policing, and that a lot of this leads to incidents of racial profiling, police brutality, and other things, that essentially means extra money that Oakland has to pay out in the form of settlements. It's economically damaging to the city also.
So you say that there's an economic problem, and then there's the problem of strained community relations largely because of this, that there isn't a sense of we're in this together, but rather, I think you said, a military mentality. And somebody in your article said this causes a mentality among officers who feels if they're entering a battlefield where the job is to get in, fight the bad guys, and then get out.
At the heart of the problem really seems to be a divide between OPD and the residents of the city that has persisted since at least the 1950s. After the Second World War, the Oakland Police – during the Second World War, rather, the Oakland Police Department recruited largely from the South, recruited largely white men from the South to come in and police the city. And they continued that policy even through the 1960s when they would recruit folks coming back from Vietnam and demobilizing at the Oakland Army base. The city has never really, despite the demands of community groups such as the Black Panther Party, the city to have officers be recruited from Oakland and live in the city.
But
city officials have never really fulfilled that promise. Go ahead.
You said, though, that in the 1980s that changed.
There was an effort in the 1980s. We found data that indicated that roughly 18% of the police department lived in Oakland. And the father of an individual who was killed, of a teenager who was killed by Oakland police officer Miguel Masso in this past May, Adam Bluford, his son Alan, was shot to death on May 6. Adam told us that when he was a young man growing up in Oakland, in East Oakland, they had officers who were from the community, treated folks with respect, and were also viewed in a more positive light. And what we have now is we have roughly 9% of the police department living in Oakland, and we have a very confrontational relationship between the police department and the city's communities of color.
And that's reporter Ali Winston. He's joined by Darwin Bond Graham, and they both wrote the cover article in the East Bay Express. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. So, Ali, explain the consent decree that Oakland is under right now, largely for issues of police brutality.
So, since 2003, the city entered a agreement with a group of with over 100 plaintiffs who claimed that they had been assaulted, beaten, and framed by a group of four West Oakland officers who called themselves the Riders. They had their own little name for their clique. Three of those officers were acquitted in two separate criminal trials. The city had to pay out $10.5 million in settlement money. One of those officers is a fugitive from the law. He is believed to be in Mexico right now. So over the past 9 years, the police department has been required to reform its investigations, its internal affairs probes, tracking systems for problem officers. A lot of this is very technical work, but the heart of the consent decree is ensuring that similar misconduct cannot happen again. What's happened over the past decade is we've seen numerous problems with strip searches, officer-involved shootings, retaliations against people who have blown the whistle on problems in OPD, and also a persistent culture of antagonism and almost intolerance towards parts of the city's progressive communities and even the judge itself. There was a photograph that the court monitor noted recently that had racially offensive depictions of Judge Henderson and Mayor Gene Kwan that was left posted outside the lineup room in OPD's building for 2 days before being taken down. So for a number of reasons, for being unable to fulfill the requirements of the consent decree, OPD is on the verge of federal receivership, which means that a court-appointed master would take over control of OPD from the city. The city would lose control over financial decisions, deployment decisions, hiring and firing decisions regarding the police, and that is something that has never been done to a police department before in the country's history.
And how does that threat of federal receivership tie in with this issue of having a police force that largely lives outside of the city?
Well, we were curious in looking at the consent decree. We've looked through it, and we've followed the attempts to enact the reforms that are demanded in it over the years, and It seems that every time OPD accomplishes something within it, that at the same time it's like a step forward, two steps back, and then they violate several policies and new problems emerge. So it seemed to us that something deeper was going on. There's a problem that's beneath the surface that's not being addressed. So we brought in different voices into this conversation that haven't really been listened to yet. We talked to community activists. We talked to community members. We talked to persons who are organizing currently against police brutality, people who are organizing in the street to improve police-community relations. And what they kept saying over and over was, look, you can reform this, you can tweak that, you can accomplish these little technical things, but so long as, for instance, the majority of the cops don't live in the city, well, that's a big underlying problem. It causes huge alienation. There's no real accountability. The officers don't feel accountable, and they get away with a lot of malfeasance and crime.